I want to speak for a few minutes about the big picture. Which I don't think any of us have. Because it's impossible to grasp or conceptualize how big and vast it is, and how small we are in it. And yet, our lives are informed by the big picture all the time. And the more we can relax our sense of certainty about what is and what's happening and what we know, excuse me, the more the big picture starts to reveal itself. And there comes a point where it pushes against the borders of your mind, and it's too much to bear on some level. It's too big, it's too vast, and yet it somehow allows your awareness and consciousness to come to that border and begin to move past it. You cannot own the big picture. You cannot hold it. You must, in a sense, dissolve into it. And that takes enormous amounts of faith and trust and a willingness to be unmoored from what you know, what you believe, what you think of as true, what you think of as absolute, to completely let it go. Now, there isn't a lot in our normal daily life that brings us to the big picture. Most of us move around quite contentedly in the small picture. Some microscopic lives that really don't have any conception of something other than the microscopic nature of gimme, gimme, I want, I need, I don't have enough, I want more. That kind of microscopic self-involvement is really what I think motivates most people. And when we watch it at its worst, it's selfishness, it's egocentricness, it's me against everyone else. It's really unappealing. And in a way, it makes you reach for a larger vision. And it starts out really as a kind of communality, being aware of the community, being aware of the other in your life. And that begins to expand you into the big picture. You start to realize it's not about you. And in a way, it's kind of about us. And maybe even it's about us globally. And then even that goes away. And it's beyond that. And the mind is not trained to go there. Watching great minds, and you watch them on TV a lot. Great may be the wrong word, but minds that look deeper than yours, minds that have a bigger picture, a more global understanding, historical context. These are minds that really help put us into a certain kind of perspective that make us go, oh, I get it. It's not just about this, it's about that, or it's always been thus, or whatever it is that helps you see it in a bigger way. But the big picture is not just a mind event. It's not just a visual auditory event. The big picture is a kind of expansion of awareness that goes past all the boundaries that you are familiar with. And as it goes past those boundaries, you will experience, it varies. Some people will experience wonder and awe. Some will experience terror and fear. Not to be contained by the comfortable and the known is challenging. And when things start to break up around you, which we are now experiencing as a collective, it is very, very troubling to see that our sense of the world is not shared by everybody. That there are whole communities that see the world very differently from other parts of the world. Even within families, even within groups of friends, that our particular understanding is not referenced back to us. And so we have this sense of, well, what is the big picture? What contains all of us? And if it's not a worldview, a collective sense of what is, where is the thing that brings us together as one? And earlier in this century or the previous century, there were certain markers for global understanding and oneness. It's interesting how upheaval, like war in the past century, made huge numbers of people understand a collective need to care about one another, to protect each other, to know good from evil. And it was very affirming, and people walked around with a sense of, we are the good guys, we collectively. And it was really pervasive. And I was born into the world during that time. And I talk about the backyard over the fence kind of connection that one had with neighbors, talking and laughing and joyful. And there was a community, which at some point in time began to break apart a little bit. We started to see changes in what our belief systems were. And the 60s were a huge upheaval for many people, and worldviews started to expand. And we started to, certainly communities of us, and I was one of them, started to see a much bigger picture. And the psychedelic picture, if you will, which turned into the spiritual picture, was of a universe of vastness in which we were pretty minuscule. We were there, we functioned, but our understanding of things was very limited. And we saw those who were initiated into the big picture and those who lived in the small picture, minuscule picture. And we continue that way to this moment. The only problem is the fracturing of collective understanding is becoming so pervasive and so powerful that the lack of agreement in the world right now is causing everyone a lot of pain. The only thing we seem to know is that there is a viral moment happening, a COVID moment, that is binding us all together, you would think, in a collective need to watch out for one another, to care for one another, to be aware of our collective being. And even there, we're watching whole segments of the society in denial of that. And it's really quite fascinating. So what does one do to reach for the big picture? And what do you do when you have found some vision of that? What's so really fascinating is how the human mind can only go so far in capturing the big picture. The Einsteins of the world, the Oppenheimers of the world, the people with the great grasping of the structure and molecular nature of time and space, they can only go so far. Even they stop at a point and they go, it's beyond, beyond. We, with lesser minds perhaps, lesser capacities to get the big picture on a intellectual material level have been redirected to this inner journey, which appears to be a doorway to bigness. And once you start to go through the entry points into your heart or your mind or your egocentric sort of expression, into your gut, into your sexual reproductive nature, once you start to go into those spaces and you start to draw in, it's very clear very quickly that this is bigger than you can understand. This is not containable. There's something massive going on here. And yet, certain scholars come back, the Buddhas, the great teachers, and they try to put it into a framework that we can hold on to and go, oh, I get it. I get the big picture. It's about this, it's about that, that's how it works. The minute you've done that, you have locked into a very small image of something very big. And once you've locked into it, the power of the big image, the big picture, fades away. Because when you've contained it, and you've known it, and you can describe it, and you can talk about its rules, and you can talk about its specificities, what happens, unfortunately, is that it's no longer what it truly is. Uncontainable, unknowable, unimaginable, beyond anything any human being can bring back into a space that can make it digestible. It cannot be digested. It simply is. And in some phenomenal and miraculous way, it informs you, it speaks to you, it is accessible through you, and in some foundational way, it is you. But the minute you own that, the minute you put on the robes of whatever you want to call them, swamihood, I don't want to diminish that, but you put on the robes of knowing, your knowing is no longer going to be of true service unless you use those robes to point to the unknowable. And if you become really deeply humble in the face of this inexplicable vastness, you will be living a life that is, in a way, a personal, private, reductive projection of something beyond. The opportunity of this particular practice, which is relatively rarefied, is that you are being given a password, if you will, into the opening of the heart or the mind or the intuitive self into that which you cannot bring back. You can just go there. You can witness it. And you can, if you will, bow down, invite it in, and let it wash through you on a day-to-day basis. But let me warn you, if you do that, the big picture changes how you experience this physical life. It changes it in ways that I cannot fully articulate. It changes it in ways that on one level you really want to know and experience, and on another level, keep it away from me. It's so big and so annihilating. And it is not something we really are prepared for. And it is a foundational level of work that allows us to open to its bigness in continual ways every day, more and more and more. And if you haven't signed on for that, then you may want to change the channel. But what happens in this expansion into the big picture is that the knower of it cannot survive. There will be a sense of self. But I can only tell you my own experience is I am witnessing an inability, if you will, to hold on to the self as I've known it for these 70, almost 78 years. It is simply no longer a containment. Something else is happening. And it's speaking to you and speaking through me. And in a sense, you may think it's speaking from me, but it's not true. It is simply speaking and it's preparing you for the big picture. In a way, we're all being prepared for the big picture. And every lifetime is an opportunity to approach it, to bow down to it, to recognize it, and to be, if you will, they say, liberated by it. But of course, how many people do we know who are doing that, really? In all of the people we know, you can make a list of them. How many people do you know who are looking for the big picture, other than maybe through the intellect? Maybe through the heart, maybe through the intuitive knowing of your belly gut. But how many people really, not a lot. And I know for me, there aren't a lot of people to go to get information. And one of them that I used to go to is now a QAnon member. So that's kind of off the table. And they're not a lot of places to go to reference that you're doing it right, that this is the way it is. There's only the unknowable big picture that starts to become beyond anything you can conceptualize or even verbalize well. I am doing the best I can. And the only reason I keep pushing this at you, one is you show up to hear about it. Two, it tells me to talk about it. It is self-expressing itself, and because it wants to be known, because it is the true essence of what we are. And at some point, it's going to take away all the particulars. It's going to take our body away. It's going to take our name away, our history away, and it's going to wash away a lot of it, even while we're here staring at it. It's just going to go, oh, well, that memory's gone. Oh, well, that childhood's gone. All of these things just start to evaporate and you don't necessarily miss them. All you end up getting is right now. That's all you get, right now. And the right now that you get is a snapshot, if you will, of the big picture. And what happens when there is a knowing of that is, wow. Wow. There's also pain. There's also wonder and awe. There's also fear. I have to say, it's not like it's a simple expansion into knowing. It is a tearing apart, ripping apart all of the threads that hold you together on any level. And in the end, maybe it gives you a scissors and lets you start to click and cut them away. And you have to kind of be careful about what you do and how you do it, but you'll see a part of you that's locked into a certain rigidity and you gotta go, nope. And you have to try all of your mechanisms, but it might be let it go. And what results is a new immersion in vastness, in totality, in the absolute. It is breathtaking. It is awesome. It is fear-producing for the minuscule part of our being that's still there witnessing or looking at it. Because until you just become it, which it's working for, there is a you and an it. And the smaller that little it is, the more little baby-like it is, the more fearful in a sense. It's like it doesn't know what to do. It doesn't have the rules. And so it's waiting to be comforted. And what does happen, in my experience, is when you're lost and frightened and you don't know, and not knowing is hard, and you are dependent on the other for your protection and safety, the other, which is all there is, does this. It goes, you're okay. Got your back. You're okay. And then you start to be aware that the human experience, the human drama, the day-to-day stuff on television, the impeachment, the political realm, the pandemic, all of this stuff, it's so small. The human journey is so small. All of our achievements are so small. They're wonderful. They're not without amazing quality and beauty and extraordinary aspect, but they are small. The bigness, the big picture, changes everything. And what it does is it allows you in every moment to witness the miracle of what it means to be this small and this important, this central, this cared for, this acknowledged by the vastness of being. Why does the big picture care about us this much? You know, I don't have a complete answer for that other than the sense that we are the big picture. We are it. We are as big as it gets and as small as it gets. And again, the minute we try to lock it into a mental picture, or we come up with the historical record or whatever it is, the history, the prophecy of being, it doesn't work. Nothing holds, nothing. And finally, you just go like this, thy will be done. And you live that, and you try to live it day by day, and you find it's really interesting because what do you do day by day? You get up and make breakfast. You brush your teeth. You, whatever you do, you know, to live this miraculous sunrise, sunset reality that we find ourselves in. And it's very repetitive. It has like, I've already done that before, or it has a sense of, oh my God, this again. Or variations on all of the above. But the big picture allows you to look at what is, and in a sense, bow down and say, thank you. Stuff happens in the big picture. Babies get born, grandchildren. A new taste that comes into your mouth, or an old taste that's wonderful. A sunrise, a sunset. What it feels like to go out and get the newspaper on a freezing cold day. What it feels like to walk back into a warm house. These are not just abstractions. These are real expressions of what it means to be alive. And to be alive is to be in the big picture. Being alive is what this is all about. I can't tell you why. I can't tell you what it is. I can't tell you that it's for the best or not for the best. It's fallen away from me to know. All I can tell you is when I pick up that newspaper in the morning and I notice that the squirrel has just tried to get into it like it's food, and I go, well, that doesn't make sense. And I'm walking on ice, and I have these little cleats that Bob Sink gave me, so I'm not slipping, and I'm going, wow, I'm standing upright, and it's really freezing, and the cold air just grabs me, and I go, wow, wow. And then when I get in the house, and I just take off my coat and my scarf and the cleats and everything else, and I just go, I'm in such a comfortable, wonderful space. I am in this moment protected, but I'm also aware that were I outside and I had no coat and I had no home and I had nothing but cold, it would be horrifying and terrifying. And I am aware that I am protected from that horror and terror now. And I am also aware that at one moment in time, that will go away. And if I'm lucky, all of these years of training, which are a snap of a finger on one level, but all of these years of training will allow me to go, okay. You know, my grandfather was 103 and he had a heart condition. And at one point he was going into the hospital and they said, we're not sure without something radical right now that you'll survive. And he said, it's okay, I'm ready. And they said, okay. And 10 minutes later, he said, save me. I'm not ready, save me. It was the first time he ever understood at 103 that he was really gonna die. That's where most of us reside. We don't realize what we're up against. And that is the big picture. We are facing the big picture every day, and we are either looking into its eyes or doing this practice that we do, which allows us to actually touch the big picture or to be touched by it and to witness that we are somehow part of something enormous, or we look away. We don't look at it. You know, the old Netflix idea, or seven glasses of wine, or whatever one does to kind of blind oneself to the reality of what's there. But if you can just sit still and not narcotize yourself, you will find your way there. And there will be times where it will be beyond scary, especially when you see what my grandfather saw in his 103rd year, 10 minutes away from having accepted dying. He had never really, really, really faced it. So we're all facing the big picture, every one of us. We're in it, we're of it, and we are witnesses to it. And in some big sense, we are it. How it transforms and elevates our lives, I don't know what to say, other than it's real. It's that which supports and sustains. It is our very essence. And if you want to live this large collective life in some truer sense, then it's worth finding the big picture. And if you want to find the big picture, sit still long enough and quiet enough, ask for help to open, surrender, go inside and let it announce itself to you. Let it comfort you, let it take you on a journey. Nityananda said, go into your heart and roam. You know, it's not like go in your heart and just sit. There's a journey and we are all on that journey. And those of you listening to this have been on that journey for a long time. It goes deeper, it's bigger, and it allows you to really, really venture into something that wants to be seen and witnessed, even known, but you will not be able to contain the knowledge. You will only be able to express it, and I'll tell you how you will express it. You will come back to your day-to-day self, and you will be a nice person. You will be a kind person. You will be a loving person. You will be a compassionate person. You will care about others. You will offer yourself to others. You will be available and you will be kind to yourself and you will be open to life and you will be appreciative and grateful for whatever comes. And when you're afraid, and when you're despairing, and when you're unsettled, you will look at it and go, yes, even this. And all of that stuff passes. You know, the last few weeks for me have been very, very tricky. And it's always very hard for me to bring myself to the teacher mode when I'm going through meaninglessness and despair. Sorry. You know, and I talked about it, and I keep thinking half the people who watch these talks go, okay, click off. You know, this guy doesn't have it. And I'm totally willing to admit that I probably don't have it. But I am aware now that all of that stuff is working to free me. It is working to allow me to accept despair and meaninglessness and not jump off a bridge and not try to find a, you know, a bourbon or whiskey or whatever that will knock it out of my system. I am just trying to be with it and watch it. And it is really hard. And I bring it up because every one of you may well go through it. And I don't want you to think, oh, I'm not working right or I'm doing the wrong thing. It has nothing to do with that. It's process. It comes just like the rainstorms and the snowstorms and the windstorms and all the stuff. It comes, you prepare for it as best you can. It lasts sometimes longer than you imagine, and then it goes away and you are past it, or it's past you. Not that it might not come back again, but if you've had enough storms in your life, you know, cuddle up, settle in, put another log on the fire, or turn up the heat, or put on a sweater, and ride it out. Ride it out. That's having a sense of the big picture. So we're all together on this one. We're all immersed in a journey. We've all taken the steps to move forward. Those of you who are here and still listening to this are still committed to it. God bless. I think you are on the verge of continual expansion and awareness, and it's worth the effort. And if I'm wrong about all of this, I can only tell you from my perspective, the moments of awe and grandeur and wonder and acceptance and miracle that occur are worth it. They're just worth it. They're better than the narcotizing effect of watching the news all day and thinking this is what the world is. It's just a very small part of a big picture. Okay. Any questions? Daniel?
Oh yeah, Bruce, I just wanted to say, can you hear me?
Yeah, just a little louder.
Okay. Yeah, I just wanted to say, you know, when you're talking about the masters of the past, like the Buddha coming back and formulating things, I just wanted to respond that I feel like the experience is probably no different than yours, where we're sitting in meditation together, having this silent kind of communion that's sort of beyond words. And now we've listened to you talk for an hour, you know, so I don't think there's a difference there. And what the Buddha said right after he reached enlightenment, he uttered to himself, deep and quiet, simple, clear, unformulated, a truth that is like nectar I found. Whoever I explain it to, they won't understand it. So I'll just remain alone silently in the jungle. And that was what he said to himself. And then the story goes that the gods Brahma and Vishnu offered him gifts like a week later or something, requesting that he teach for the benefit of beings. And so then he taught what it said to be 84,000 different types of teachings for the capacities of different beings, but they're all considered to be imperfect, skillful methods to point towards this like unformulatable wisdom. So that's kind of part of the teaching, that it is beyond the words, and that these are just partial paths to point in that direction. I just wanted to pass it along.
No, I appreciate that. And I love your connection to the Buddha's teachings, and I love the affirmation of it. I'm not as well versed, as you know, but I really I'm finding my way, and I think where I say if it articulates some of those earlier teachings, it's just a signal probably that what's going on here is timeless, and that we all find our way to it in our own particular way. I just know that trying to have a code of behavior given to people that they can think they can practice and therefore achieve something is not the path. The path is not following the rules. The path is following something deep within you that beckons you into deeper and deeper parts of the big picture. And I think that as we go there, I think we all find the thing that Buddha found, assuming that we're willing to go deep enough and let that clarity come through. And of course, as you said, Daniel, it's not explainable. It's just not. You can give people pointers, but it's not explainable. You'll figure it out for yourself, because it's the only way to do it.
Bruce?
Let me just respond that I completely agree with you, but I think that there, like, certain teachings were given for people that needed some kind of like framework, so they weren't doing a lot of harm to themselves or others. And so that those are like the basic like teachings for the people that needed that kind of. And as you mentioned, the person that you used to connect to about meaning who went into QAnon, there's an experience right now in the wellness and spiritual New Age communities where a huge number of people from those communities have entered this conspiracy, like kind of bizarre thing of QAnon, because they don't have that kind of clarity. They just have this general vague New Agey sense. And then so they could become victimized by things as like ridiculous as QAnon. And so, that's just a concern that I have. Sometimes frameworks can be helpful to prevent going into total craziness. You see what I mean? Because obviously that was someone you respected in a spiritual context that's now got sucked into QAnon. You see what I mean? So I don't know if you can respond to that.
Well, I mean, if I understand exactly what you're saying, it's just that the teachings that are manifested are for those of us struggling for the big picture and to give us some grounding in how to struggle and how to move forward. And I certainly don't see a single teaching being the ultimate answer for everybody, but there is certain groundwork that has to be done. And I think Buddha created a lot of the groundwork, and Rudy created groundwork, and in a way our practice is groundwork for how to move forward. And people who don't have practice, who don't have some capacity for sitting and opening and going deeper inside, will get swayed by outer manifestation. And I understand that. And you see so many religions right now falling into very strange patterning based on not having the inner expression taking real form. And it's scary because people are just getting so caught in the outer version of things and missing the true teaching. And I don't know. I think we're all potentially victimized by trying to hold on to something that protects us and gives us grounding, when in the end, you have to use that to go to the place that is true protection and true grounding, which is the unknowable and the unknown. And it really finally filters through. And then you don't walk around, I don't think, pronouncing anything as it. You bow down to the unspeakable. That's my version of it. And I think we're all having to figure that out for ourselves, one way or the other. George, did you have something?
Yeah, Shelley Whitaker, who's here, shared something with me this morning, and it really resonates, and I think it helps everybody. Do not let the behavior of others destroy your inner peace. That was said by the Dalai Lama, and I thought I'd share that with everybody.
Sure. Yeah, no, I think, I mean, all of us are in the collective right now looking for answers and guidance from a lot of outside forces, and that's fine, but don't let it destroy your inner peace is the right idea. And the inner peace is the bigger picture. The inner peace is not all of the stuff going on in the world and thinking, okay, this is a global understanding, because the globe is really tiny and all of us in it are really tiny and the big picture is not tiny. And so the big picture has the doorway to a vast kind of what I would imagine is peace. It's a stillness that is quite profound. And one needs that to balance out the enormous fascination we have and fixation we have on the day-to-day. The day-to-day stuff is very compelling. And all of us are caught in a collective day-to-day right now, forced at home to have to deal with this stuff. And if you don't have an alternative space inside to kind of give you grounding in the larger scheme of things, you can get very swayed by outside forces and get really, you can lose your way, is all I can tell you, in a really big and scary way. And that's frightening to me, you know? I mean, I look at the people who went to the Capitol and started roaming around the Capitol, and I could kind of see in them many, many people I know. Not physically, not in real terms, but I understood the misperception, the misunderstanding, the patriotic fervor, the misdirection of energies that was taking place. I hate that many of them are going to go to jail, because it kind of feels like innocence in some unfortunate level caught up in the wrong place at the wrong time. And I get that. There are others who are more malevolent and more have things on their mind and heart that are really punishable and should be punished. But many of us in the world are simply so ungrounded and so unable to see the big picture that we get swayed by everything in life and pay enormous consequence for that. The value of that is, if you end up in prison or if you end up in a state of constriction on some level, you may be able to use that time to see clearly what you have done wrong and what you need to do to atone and how you can ultimately free yourself from that ignorance that was pervasive at one point in time. That's the story of many people in the human race. We come into this world kind of to atone for perhaps other stuff or to find a way through this life in a faultless way that can allow us to be a manifestation of this deep goodness and kindness and compassion that is the essence of the big picture. And if we pull that off, that's wonderful. But if you don't pull it off, you have lessons to learn. And they're there for us. They're there to learn from. And if you hit rock bottom along the way, you know, if you end up in a jail cell or you end up in some kind of personal suffering, that's your doorway to real awareness, to real waking up. It's a very, very painful path, but it is a path that many people go to, and it is a path that works or can work. If you really end up in a place of deep suffering, constriction, an inability to move forward, you have only one place to go inside, either that or just bang your head against a wall until you can't see or think anymore. But the opportunity through suffering to grow and expand and atone and recover and rediscover who you are is a real opportunity. I saw a movie last night, I think it's coming out soon or may already be out, called The Land, or just called Land, with Robin Wright. And I'll throw it out there. I don't mean to sell movies every week, but it's really that story. It's really the story of hitting bottom and how it transforms and how you can grow from the worst of the worst. And it's hard to watch on some level, but it's also sort of beautiful. And what it makes me realize is that Rudy's famous teaching, you know, pain is God's love. That's what it makes you realize. These deep pains that you cannot escape are the doorway into hope, into asking for help, into surrender, into guidance that we all need. And that is, for some people, the only entry point.
Bruce, if I remember correctly, Rudy used to like going to prisons to teach, and because he felt that so strongly with the people that they were really ripe for going inward and
It's funny, I don't exactly remember Rudy doing it, but I do know, I don't remember how it was organized, but I also went into the prison at Terre Haute to teach. And it's just what you're saying. These guys were more open to the teaching than anybody in the ashram. They were listening with a kind of need and desperation almost to find a way out of the one thing that they couldn't get out of. And they listened with a kind of clarity that I was really, really moved by. And so yes, if going to prison, being and recognizing the prison of your own life is an incredible way to start to see the big picture. Anybody else?
Yeah, hi, it's Hope. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Hi, I wanted to thank you first and foremost. I am very frustrated with my limitations and being open, but also seeing, you know, some kind of a little progress. I wanted to say that I think it's so tempting to think that because I've heard something or seen something on the media or through another person, that is the whole picture, because it's here. And I'm starting to believe or remember, actually it's remembering, that what's right here is a small part of the story, even though it seems so big now, because there's been, you know, because we have the internet, because we have FaceTime, it's still a small part of the story. That in other places, in other communities, different things are happening. And it's so like some of these things just like want to suck me into, okay, this is what's happening. This is it. And
you're not alone in that experience at all. You're not alone. Most people are feeling what's in front of them is the big picture. Is what's going on. And then they get another angle from another angle. And they go, well, that's the big picture. And then the more you sort of try to take in, the more you realize, I don't get the whole picture. There are people here having this response and people here having that, and people suffering and people open, and some people having great time, some people having a terrible time. And the outer world is simply so diverse that the big picture cannot come within the context of the outer manifested world. It has to come from going within into the thing that manifests the whole outer world. And most of us don't have any directive or teaching or entry point to that world, other than as close as we get is sleep. And that's not conscious, that's an unconscious version of it. So even though it's restorative and valuable, doing that consciously and doing it regularly and doing it openly is a way of finding a way of looking at the totality of what's going on moment to moment around you and seeing it contextually as something part of something so massive that you no longer give it the primacy that most of our minds and emotions are giving it these days. And you can free yourself of being so caught in the dilemma of a world in such chaos. And that's something we need to do, because right now the world is really challenging for all of us. And most people are finding whatever way they can to deal with it. This is one of those ways, although it happens to be an ancient approach to dealing with the specificity of a world in disruption. And it's a very real thing you can do that will free you from being caught by the enormous dynamic of what is happening day to day in our lives right now. And the internet's not going to make it easier over time. It's all going to get worse. Mass media is going to make it worse. We're dealing with a lot of stuff that's coming. And so what I'm describing as the journey inward is a salvation, really, in the end for all of us. And if you don't do it, if you don't have that doorway open, if you don't have that access point to your inner expansion to the big picture, you're going to get swept away by the smallness and the microcosmic mean-spiritedness in many ways of what's going on in the world right now. So it's a worthwhile thing to learn, and it's worthwhile to share with people, if in no other way, by being kind and good to those around you. That works.
And could you speak to, I don't know if this is part of your...
I'm sorry. Yeah, go ahead.
I don't know if this is part of your... I think it is. I think I heard you say this. This is the sense of wholeness, you know, and like, yeah, that we want to push some things away. And we also want to push some people away because of what they're saying. And like, I don't see that as leading to wholeness. Like, it's like, so Pete Seeger used to say, we need to learn how to talk with people we disagree with. And that was easier when they were out there and we had our little clutch, you know, we all believe this. Now it's all of us.
Well, you know, if you can have the conversation, that's great. But if you can't have the conversation, the thing to try to gravitate toward is not hating and judging and diminishing the other, but finding a way to see them for who they are, to understand their humanity, excuse me, to love them, even though you are on total polar opposites of the political spectrum or the how to live a life spectrum, and just open and just not get caught in the smallness of the day to day. I know it's hard, and it can be really hard if they're going to come in your house and shoot you, you know, but it needs to come down to that, because life can get that awful. And it has in the past, not that many hundred years ago. People were being rounded up and killed in homes, and you know, for by their own villagers. And you look at that and go, well, how can I open my heart to that? Well, I just remember that Mahatma Gandhi, when he was killed, went Om Namah Shivaya, when he was assassinated. Those were his last words. He sent it to God. I think that's training. I think that comes from training. In the last moment, rather than, you know, fighting and doing all these things to obstruct the reality, it's to find even in that moment a depth of acceptance of truth. That's a journey for us. And if you can arrive at that, that's really a remarkable, remarkable thing.
Bruce, what do you, vis-a-vis this discussion here, what was just said, one thing I always remember, and as you know, I never met Rudy, but I listened to many, many, many of his tapes. We used to have them on reel to reel. And he was one of, obviously, the reasons I joined this meditation, to say the least. But one thing I remember from his tapes is he used to talk about certain people around you or him that he felt were on a psychic level trying to kill him. That stuck with me, because it's something I remember. But he did, the way he talked about it was sort of very practical, in the sense that, look, this person I know is at some level trying to assassinate me psychically. And, you know, I'm just going to stay away from this. I'm just not going to take and he used the word shit sandwich, right, that he was going to be given by that person. That's a really difficult idea. And maybe you have some insight into that. And in the sense that I also have had experiences in my life where I knew that a group of people, this is more professionally, were at a psychic level trying to eliminate me. Now, I actually took the strategy of staying very, very open to them and going, I know what I need to accomplish here. And this has to do with getting tenure. I'm not going to let this, I know they're fighting me. Do you know what I mean? I know there's a fight going on, but I'm going to keep battling it, but I'm not going to let it change my openness. And the interesting thing is, when it was all said and done, these folks are my friends now, but they tried to assassinate me. Well, I don't know if you have any insight into that other than the reference to Rudy and what he meant by that. And what does it mean now in terms of, you know, when you sense you're talking to somebody who is quite dangerous at some level?
Well, what are they dangerous to? I mean, there's the kind of assassination of ego as opposed to physical blowing your brains out, diminishing you on some level and making you not able to get the thing you want. And that's ego battlement. It goes on all the time in human condition, me first. I watch the birds outside our window and they are just going after each other all the time. It's my seat. I want it. Get away. It's for me. That's all they do. It's complete struggle for me. And humans are not that different. You know, they were a little bit more nuanced, but not a lot. And so those kinds of battles go on. And the battle to destroy the ego mind of the ego person is only for one the other person's betterment. They want an advantage from your diminishment. It's very low level operating procedure for human experience. The spiritual journey is to begin to witness that, see what it is, open your heart, realize nothing can destroy you, really. They can try to diminish you and you have to fight, and you fight with honesty and truth and openness, with kindness, with goodness, all of those qualities you bring to the table. If they don't work, they don't work. I mean, I won't go through all of my Hollywood experience, but Hollywood is an ego destroyer. That's, for me, that's what it was about. And everything they finally destroyed in me has allowed my spiritual life to flower. And I have no regrets. You know, I mean, I got what I needed, and the growth that took place was a growth that took place in spite of a lot of very difficult people wanting primacy, you know, and supremacy. And in the end, I don't care. I really don't care. And it has freed me so much. You know, I got out of that experience what I needed. I got enough. I did not become the supreme, whatever it is, writer, director of the world, you know, or whatever that may mean. You know, I met people who did become that, and I do not want to ever have to try to struggle to get that mantle or to own it. I think it's really fine to be less is more. It really is a relief on many levels. And the spiritual journey really allows you to see clearly into the human struggle, what human beings do, what they have to do, how hard it is they try to, gain something that will give them permanence in a world of total impermanence. And so they will not succeed, and you're allowing them to play out their role with a fair fight. Do the battle. If you lose, you lose. You win, you win. And you move on. But you will not be diminished by it. You will not have karmic weight pulling you down because you've played by dirty rules. You will find that you are free when they are, in fact, entombed by their choices. And that's not pretty at all. Mary?
I just wanted to ask you, but tell you about my experiences when Will and I left the ashram in Boston after Bloomington. There were years, not Will, for me, that I did without meditation, and then found another teacher, an Indian teacher, female, who based Kundalini yoga, a different breathing exercise, but based it on also chanting and a mantra. And the mantra ultimately is, for me now, Rudy, help me. But the mantra that we practiced then, I remember more, because the more you did it, and they had the students, disciples, writing it down, thousands of pages, Ram Ramaya Namaha, Ram Ramaya Namaha. So when I'm in trouble or fearful, it's automatic. It comes up automatically and it helps me to surrender. A lot of times I don't remember it and then I could get in a fight, but I realized just now it's the same. Om Namah Shivaya was, what's her name's, Muktananda's disciple. I even visited that ashram and that group and asked the huge picture of Nityananda, is this person my teacher? And he like, the picture shook its head, you know? So I have some sensitivity that these things do work. It's remembering them that's the hardest thing. And I had such resistance until about a month ago to meditating every day. And this is, I knew Rudy. I met Rudy. This is how long I've been involved in meditation. And it was like a rebirth, meditating every day, asking for help. And it really works.
Well, all I can say is amen. I mean, I know the journey to whatever you want to call it, to the big picture, I'll keep using that today, it takes many steps over a long period of time. And, you know, it can pass through many different teachers and many different forms. But if it's sincere and if it has a hunger to it, it will deliver. You know, the universe is not unaware of us. It is not absent. It is very present. And if we make ourselves known and are sincere enough, it knows that, and it will come back. It will give you what you want. If it's insincere or if it's not fully developed, you're just not the vehicle that it wants to inhabit. But when you make yourself available in a sincere way, the universe goes, here I am. And it really shows up. And it is a remarkable thing how it shows up. And you simply will know you have been touched by it, or more than that, inhabited by it. And that it speaks through you, for you, as you. It's just there. And the more you let go of you, and the more you hand yourself over or allow yourself to be embraced by it, you become a vehicle. And that vehicle is like an extraordinary vessel for all the people around you. Maybe it may be in large numbers, it may be one other person. It doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter. You become that on earth which wants to be manifested in this physical space. It needs people like you, like all of us, to show up and be the voices of, we'll keep it simple, goodness and kindness, love, truth. That's all it needs. And if we do that, it will make you articulate. It will make you a wonderful servant of something worth serving. That's my sense of it. I know this is running on and on. Is there anybody else who has a important question that hasn't been answered? Okay. So next week, Rudy's Samadhi Day, I'll be talking to the California contingency. But, you know, it's important, I think, to express your gratitude for what's been given. Not everybody in life gets, or at least not as clearly as we have been given. So any opportunity next Sunday to say thank you to Rudy is appropriate. You know, light a candle, sit down, light some incense, just look at his picture, and let it be known that we have been touched by something that is something that hasn't touched everybody, and we're lucky. Anyway, I love you.